Guide Manual. If you have this, they're on page 26 in this book. So is the Attunement, etc. So if you, because relational circuits are such a big deal, them being online, I think it's vital that you learn and understand what it looks like to have your relational circuits online. So when your circuits are on, you feel connected to whomever you're talking with. And you desire that connection. And you see others as relational beings. You will be aware of that person or people's true heart. You feel compassion. You feel joy. Joy as in you're glad to be with them. And you feel peace and contentment. If this isn't happening, your internal reality is not this, then your relational circuits are offline. Now, you can talk to somebody else and be talking to them and your circuits be online, but their circuits, the other person's circuits, are offline. And even though you feel connected to them, they won't feel connected to you. They won't desire to be connected to you. They won't see you as a relational being. They'll see you as the enemy or an object to be used, etc. They won't be aware of your true heart. They'll blame you or accuse you, etc. Possibly. They won't feel compassion. They won't be glad to be with you, and they won't feel peace and contentment. So if you're with someone and you know their relational circuits are offline, the best thing you can do is attunement. Attunement is the number one, I think probably the only way, that at least that I know of, brain-wise, to get somebody's relational circuits back online. Attunement happens when I attune to you. I communicate by my body language, my tone of voice, my gestures, my facial expressions. I communicate to you that I see you, I hear you, I understand your internal experience or expressed experience. I care genuinely about you. I'm glad to be with you. And as I communicate that to you 7 times every second, your prefrontal cortex and mine, they're talking. And your brain is checking 7 times a second to see if I'm attuned to you, to see if those things are true. And if those things are true, according to your prefrontal cortex, and you can't lie to it, if they're true, then your brain will say to you, okay, I can relax and I can let my mask down, I can share my heart, and it depends. Or I can even, and some people that are extremely fractured can't even do that yet, but they'll at least think, okay, maybe one day, 5 years from now, I'll trust you. That kind of thing, right? So this is extremely, extremely, extremely important. It's vital. It's Christ-like. It's how Yeshua lived, and it's how we are to live. If you want to help people, if you want to be an evangelist, if you want to be Christ-like, if you want to be a pastor, if you want to be a Christian, you have to do this. It's not optional. So we talked about attachment styles. If a person has dismissive attachment and has learned to live with his or her relational circuits offline most of the time, then he or she will tend to think that non-relational mode is the normal, logical, efficient, appropriate way to live life. Have you ever known anybody like that? They're not interested in intimate relationships. They're not interested in getting to know you and being glad to be with you and seeing you and hearing you and having compassion. They're not interested. They're just fine. than they think they are. They don't understand what's really happening, though, inside of their brains and their bodies. They pay a, physically, they're going to pay a high price for living that way. And if you tell that person that they're non-relational, they're liable to tell you, hey, I'm just trying to get the job done. Right? So when I try to offer attunement to someone, but I find that I'm unable to do so, that's a really big clue to me that my relational circuits are offline. When I judge someone, when I make negative assumptions about another person's motives, when I do that, basically I'm saying I'm better than that person. And when you say I do things differently and even better than they did, even if I had the same obstacles and challenges, I can guarantee you your relational circuits go offline. The minute you judge somebody, you just became non-relational. And that means you just became non-Christ-like. The next time you want to criticize or judge, even if you don't say it out loud, even if it just happens in here, Yahweh made our brains the way he made them. And as soon as we do that, we become non-relational. And if we stay there, we're going to be triggered or worse. So Dr. James Wilder has found out that checking whether a person can feel appreciation when thinking about positive memories is one of the simplest and most accurate ways to determine whether you're in relational mode or not. So if you recall a memory that's a positive memory about this person or about anything, really, but let's just say you're with somebody and you're not sure if your relational circuits are on or not, and you pull up a memory about that person that was a good memory, and you're not able to feel appreciation towards that person, you're not in relational mode. You're not. So you can check if that's if you're having trouble deciding whether you are or not. It's pretty clear to me when I'm in relational mode and when I'm not. When I don't want to be with you, boy, that's my first question I ask. Because part of that is because of my childhood way I learned to deal with trauma is to withdraw. Be the turtle, tuck my head in my shell, and try my best not to move or make a sound. So when I find myself doing that, I don't want to be with you, and I do this, ding, 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 something's wrong in here. Either I'm extremely tired, or I'm physically, emotionally, spiritually, or there's something going on in me that's not Christ-like, or there's something going on in the situation that's not Christ-like. Something's happening. And it's a really good indicator for me because I'm a people person, and it's a really good clue for me to stop and ask what's going on, because I'm really good at paying attention out here to people, really good, but when it comes to inside here, not so much. I don't like it. I don't do it. Even when I end my day and I ask Yeshua, is there anything in my day-to-day where I displeased you or hurt your heart? I want him to tell me. I don't want to go looking in there. I don't want to. So I've learned to allow him, because he's much more gentle with me than I am with me. And that's why I do that. So here are some things that cause your relational circuits to shut down. When you are angry or anxious, when you're in conflict, when you feel judgmental, when you feel irritated, when you realize that you lack joy, joy being I'm glad to be with you, everything's well and good, or when you're feeling bad for any reason. So when my circuits are offline, and yours as well, generally, for me, I feel small, weak, insecure, alone, vulnerable, unable to care for myself, and ultimately unsafe. That's if I'm in significant shutdown. Now, you can take a step away and still keep your relational circuits on. And not I'm talking, those symptoms are showing me, boy, they are off. I've shut the door, locked it, bolted it, because there's something going on that I do not want to be a part of. Make sense? So when I get back in relational mode and my circuits are online, I feel I can perceive the presence of the Lord and others. I feel large, strong, secure, able to care for myself, and safe. And instead of defending or fighting to protect myself, I'm able to engage in constructive conversations where I can attune and be open-minded, compassionate, generous, patient, and flexible. So, now we are going to look at joy. So, shift gears. And your advanced facilitator notebook in the back, I think it's 52. All right, we're going to talk about joy bonds because they are vital. These are like these topics are the ones that you can't skip, you can't leave out. They must be in your life operating, your relational circuits, attunement, and now building joy. Everybody has a joy capacity. Everybody's is different. Your capacity for joy. That capacity can grow. Trauma causes it to shrink. Doing life, building joy, doing life with 2 to 3 people that are intimately acquainted with you causes joy to grow. So do other things we'll look at. Joy is not happiness. Happiness can come from you getting a new car or a something, right? That is not joy. That's happiness. Joy is this belief, this feeling that I belong, somebody's glad to be with me, and every little thing's going to be all right. Doesn't mean that there's not problems. It doesn't mean that the storm winds aren't blowing and that the circumstances do not determine whether or not you have joy. They might determine whether you have happiness, but not joy. 1 John 1:4, these things we write so that our joy may be made complete. 2 John 1:12, though I have many things to write to you, I do not want to do so with paper and ink, but I hope to come to you and speak face to face. Why? So that your joy may be made full. And the Bible's filled with joy. In the New Testament, I encourage you to do a word search and read all the passages where we're told to have joy, and it's important. It's a big deal. So here we go. Joy grows when the weak and the strong are together, showing tenderness toward weakness. Isn't that amazing? Joy grows when the weak and the strong are together, showing tenderness toward weakness. Both the Bible and neuroscience understand joy as a relational experience in which someone is glad to be with me. Joy is the excitement around the exchange of everything that is good for life. Here's something I love. Joy starts with a smile. It starts with a smile. I just think that's incredible. Yahweh gave us smile muscles for a reason. And that we can spread joy by simply smiling at someone. Joy reduces stress. Joy improves our immune system more than exercise. This is neuroscience talking. Joy raises brighter, more resilient children. Joy is a big deal. We undervalue it. It isn't taught. It isn't explained. It isn't. Hardly do you ever hear a sermon about joy. And some of us need to alert our faces that we aren't using the muscles Yahweh gave us very much and practice smiling more. I think Yeshua was probably the most joyful man who's ever lived. I'm convinced of it because he lived in a constant understanding that his Father's glad to be with him. Even though everybody else abandoned him, his Father didn't and wouldn't. And his Father was glad to be with him. And that he showed tenderness toward weakness always. So there's three things that neuroscience has proven that must be present in order for joy to be developed and grown. Number one, a multi-generational community or family. We need the old and the young doing life together for joy to grow and be developed. Number two, a lifestyle of encountering Yahweh. Now, listen to me. This wasn't a Christian neuroscientist that said that. He said, it is proven that the brain needs faith in a God. You choose your God, but make sure you have a God for joy to grow. And you encounter him. Number three, the relational brain skills. We're going to talk about those. Joy is essential for healing and growing strong identities. Joyful identities have the power to transform broken lives, families, churches, ministries, ministry teams, schools, neighborhoods, and cultures. Now, beeps take the place of joyful, life-giving connections. Beeps are what we use when we can't get access to joy. It's a counterfeit joy. Beeps stand for behaviors. We use behaviors to get a pseudo joy. We use events. We use experiences, people, and substances. Someone who has low joy, grew up in a low joy home, and as an adult or teenager, low joy, they may look for substances to give them the joy that they're craving and longing for, because every human is looking for, number one, what did I tell you? The deepest human need we have is what? Belonging. Belonging. And so every human on the planet is looking for it in some way, shape, or fashion. So out of that belonging, knowing that you belong, then you feel joy, right? So we need to be part of a multi-generational community where we belong, and that produces joy. And that lifestyle of encountering Yahweh where we belong, it produces joy. And then doing these brain skills that we're going to look at where we belong will create even more joy. Joy is vital. If you aren't experiencing joy, I encourage you more than anything, go after that. Look, ask Yahweh, press in and find that sweet spot of joy in your life. To Yahweh or people? Is that why it's easier to quit a substance abuse once you've become closer to Yahweh? And I would add, or people? Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. because a substance is pseudo joy. That's what it is. And it's a cry that you aren't finding joy, and your brain has to have it. It's wired for it. So you look for something else to fill it, but it's not going to do it. It's a momentary high, and it doesn't last. True joy lasts, even in the downtimes, even when things you're upset about something. If you have true joy, it's going to be all right, right? So experiences, people become adrenaline addicts, looking for that next adrenaline rush. I mean, we've had them come here, and man, they do crazy things trying to get some adrenaline pumping through their bodies. Behaviors, events, people can become, that's called codependency. So we've already looked at the three response styles in a community: protectors, predators, and possums, right? How much did we look at those? Tiny bit? Oh, this is a big deal. Let's look at them. Okay, this is a huge deal. There are three different response styles in every community and every family, and a person can operate in all three of these at different times depending on the circumstances. So in one situation, you might be a possum, one you might be a predator, one you might be acting like a gentle protector. Number one, gentle protectors. These are people generally who've grown up in high joy homes. They tend to become gentle protectors, or you learn to be one. I had to learn how to become one. They have strong, joyful identities. That means they, when things are tough, they're real quick to say it's going to be okay. It's all right. We're going to make it somehow. So they have strong, joyful identities that welcomes others, and they have tender hearts toward weakness. They, protectors, do not exploit weaknesses, but instead help vulnerable community members grow in joy. In other words, they don't take advantage of people. They notice those that have low joy, and they come alongside to try to help them increase their joy. Protectors do not enable, hear that, they do not enable dysfunctional behaviors, and they're quick to protect the weak. When our community has high joy, members tend to develop strong protector skills. As a matter of fact, if you have a church, a family, a club, a community, and that community has low joy, instead of gentle protectors rising up out of the group, you'll have predators and possums across the board. There must be gentle protectors in communities in order for joy to grow. It has to happen. It has to be there, present. Predators, people who have predatory behavior. This is the primary fear-based response style. The brain, all of our brains are pre-wired for predatory responses. I believe that's because of the fall. Without training, predatory responses are all we have. We need training by gentle protectors who respond tenderly to weakness, or we will respond like predators or like prey. Predators discover the weakness and vulnerabilities of others and then exploit them. They use them. They use people. Predators use weaknesses to obtain and retain dominance in the food chain. Predators fiercely guard their positions and will hurt others in the community if threatened. Predators also do their best to hide their weaknesses and appear strong to assure their positions. Predators are the most common product of low joy communities. The third group of people in a community, possums. They're also fear, anxiety-based people, and they're also found in low joy communities. Possums do not occupy positions of dominance in the community, and their style is based primarily on avoiding being exploited by predators. They're the ones that want to be invisible. They want to be quiet. They want to sit in the back of the room and don't notice me. Possums have usually been hurt in relationships, and they will do almost anything to avoid being hurt again. They hide, avoid, minimize, withdraw, and conceal their weaknesses as much as possible. Their low joy environment creates weaknesses and vulnerabilities that are impossible to conceal. Predators are likely to spot and exploit the vulnerabilities in possums, leaving them feeling ashamed, used, and even more fearful. When protectors are few, it's a sure sign that the community has low joy levels. When predators are thriving and the possums are hiding, we can be sure that joy is low and that it will go even lower. The most effective way to build joyful identity is by developing a tender heart toward the weaknesses in others. This gentle response comes from seeing weaknesses as an opportunity to show that I care more about the person than I do their actions. And joy levels increase around people who regularly respond gently and lovingly to those who are weak. You know, Margie shared an example of the gentleman that she was helping who wasn't doing anything but to earn her help, but yet she responded as a gentle protector to this man. And I don't know about him, but for Margie, she grew from it. And anybody that knew about what she was doing, I guarantee you grew from it, because that's the fruit of being a gentle protector. Others around you grow in joy. Like I said, you have a certain capacity. Everyone has a certain capacity in your brain for joy. And the more you practice being kind and loving and gentle to weakness, the greater your capacity grows in your brain. And it's a physical, it's not spiritual. We're talking about a physical manifestation in your brain, a part of your brain that grows, your relational joy center. So those three things must be present. And in order for your joy capacity to increase, one of the reasons that's a big, big deal is not just because you want to be able to be kind and loving to hurting weak people, but also because my brain just completely shut off my thought. Just that second. There's another reason you want to have, I got it, I found it. Thank you, Yahweh. Is because whatever your capacity for joy is, let's say it's this big. That means you can only handle that equal amount of trauma. They balance each other. And if you have a capacity this big and you get a trauma bomb dropped in your lap this big, that means that you won't be able to remain true to who you are. And it will exceed your ability to process it and for you to remain true to who you are. And so you will grab some kind of beep, substance, people, experience. You'll find something to bring that pseudo joy to try to numb your pain. In my case, I would just go inside myself and disappear for a while in my unhealed. And it will absolutely go down. Everything will. And so it's vitally important that we understand how serious this is, that we do intentional things to increase our joy capacity, especially as everything that's being stirred up in our nation and the pressure that's coming, we're going to need to have greater joy capacity to be able to say, as things get tough, hey, everything's going to be all right. I'm glad I'm here. I'm so glad I'm with you. We're going to do this together. That's a gentle protector. It's going to be all right. And we don't judge people and we don't point our finger at them. Instead, we just come alongside and respond in gentleness to them and with them. All right, let's talk about protectors. Again, protectors respond to weakness and create joy in at least three ways. Number one, protectors amplify every little bit of joy they find instead of amplifying the problems and the trouble and the upset. So they focus on every little bit of hope, every little bit of joy they can find, and I'm still glad to be with you. Number two, protectors notice when people are tired and let them rest. Weakness often shows up as fatigue or feeling overwhelmed or somebody saying, I'm just tired. So protectors also encourage the weak to go just a little bit farther, and then they let them rest until joy returns. This cycle of effort and rest builds trust and peace. We call this shalom. Shalom respects the weakness in others and matches the work to what they can do. Number three, protectors respond to weakness by sharing the distress caused by the weakness, even when the protector might be the one that started the distress. For example, if I see someone and I know that they're ready to be pushed just a little bit more, you know, they've coasted now and it's obvious they're coasting. Come on, let's just put a little, you can do it for 30 more minutes. I know you can. Come on, let's do. Or you're in a God encounter. I don't want to look at it. I've already seen enough. Come on, can we just, and a gentle protector knows or does their best to know how far to push. And then as soon as they've stepped in and done what they could, then the gentle protector's real quick to, okay, now, whew, let's go back to your safe place. Let's just hang out under the apple tree and eat an apple or two and rest just for a little bit. That's a gentle protector. And it's true in life and out in the gardens and in a greenhouse and what all the different things we do here. So it's that, because you don't want to enable. So there's just this fine dance that happens. As gentle protectors do that, a bond is formed between them that pain can't break. And this relationship stays stronger than the problem. And we call this the ability returning to joy after something has gone wrong. So here's a list of things at the bottom of the page that protectors are really good at. They promote play. They join in joy. They keep an expectancy and curiosity about what will grow from this weakness. They let everyone rest, even the strong. Like, you know, after we have a week of pouring out here, I told our staff last time, we need to make it mandatory after we have every training that our staff gets a break right after. Because it's, spiritually it's intense. There's a lot of extra. We got to keep the farm running. We got residents. We got to keep our thumb on their pulse. And then we want to make sure that we're here and available for all of you. There's just a lot to it. So the gentle protectors allow the strong to rest too. They amplify joy more than distress, share all distress, including the distress they produce. They keep problems smaller than their relationships. They keep the focus on the weak while taking good care of themselves. That's a big one. Maintain their own stability while they stabilize the weak. They keep predators away. They encourage the weak to point out weaknesses in them, in the strong, including themselves. and they encourage the weak to become protectors of the weaknesses around them. I want to talk about that keep predators away for a second. The most dangerous thing that can happen in a community or a family is to have a predator loose. Someone who's operating as a predator. It will destroy so quickly a community. I've seen it. I've watched it. It's surprising how quickly the leaven spreads through the dough. And there is one thing that we've learned is, we're really patient with people. But as soon as we see someone here demonstrating predatory behavior, we call them on it. And we point it out. And we explain how that's not going to happen here. And if you want to be asked to leave this farm, that's the main thing that's going to get you asked to leave the farm. And we don't mess around with it. No unsanctified mercy towards it. And, and if they respond to us with, okay, all right, I really want to not do that. That's all we need. Okay, we're going to work with you. And then we'd go again. And as soon as we see it again, they get called in. Nope, we're not doing this. And it depends on the response. It depends on a number of things. But if that behavior continues, that person cannot stay here. They just can't. Because we have to look out for everybody. And so in the very beginning, 17 years ago when we started here, I was way over here on the mercy spectrum and had this belief that surely everybody wants Yahweh as much as I do. And everybody wants to be gentle and kind and loving as I do. And I was just naive and whatever. And so we bent over backwards, and I wanted it more than some of them wanted it. And so I learned the hard way. And we allowed predatory behavior longer than we should have. And we were way more merciful than we should have been. And we grew and learned. And now we believe we have a pretty healthy response and pretty healthy balance between being merciful and gentle and kind, but that ain't gonna happen here, So, and because of that, we've had to ask some people to leave, and generally those people continue their predatory behavior after they leave, and they're the ones that say all kinds of bad things about us and how terrible and da-da-da-da-da we were. Because they're doing the same thing there that they did here, and we're just not going to allow it for the sake of our community and what Yahweh wants to do here. So predatory people do not like to be confronted. They don't like to be dethroned. They want to be on the top of the food chain. And when they can't be, they cause trouble and destruction and all kinds of other division. So I warn you, if that's in your family, if it's in your group, your church, if whatever, it's serious. And you've got the description there so you can identify predatory behavior. I just feel bad for the people who respond like a possum, because, boy, they're just terrified. You got a predator on the loose. They're just not going to open up. They're not going to share. They're going to just hide in the corner. So it's not good. All right, we already talked about type A and type B trauma and the 6 unpleasant emotions. Mindsight. This is not reading somebody's mind. It's not ESP. It's not any of that stuff. But MindSight is my brain learning. My brain is constantly communicating with your brain. And the more I know you, the better able I'm able to detect what you're feeling. This is a skill. We learned it with our parents growing up. When mom or dad gave you the look, you knew what it meant. That's MindSight. You know somebody's facial expression so well. Boy, you know, there are people I can look at and I know right what they're thinking because I know them so well. I'm that way with Danny, my kids, my grandkids. So, and others, that's MindSight. MindSight is the dynamic process created by watching the moment-by-moment changes in micro-expressions in someone's face and body. We cannot learn MindSight without face-to-face interactions with people that we love and trust. Movies, video games don't teach this valuable skill. This is an important skill. Our society today is doing everything to keep this from happening. You know, texting, even phones, because we used to have to meet with people face-to-face, and now we just send them a text or an email. And kids spend so much time on video games and television, and some children, and so they can't learn this from watching a movie. It has to be real time. It has to be eye to eye. It has to be with someone they love and trust. And they learn this skill because it's a skill that will help them for the rest of their lives. When they're in a situation and they don't know anybody and they have this skill, they're able to really that fast. Oh, that right there, that's predatory. Oh, nope, that's a general protector. That fast. And so, MindSight is important. You can practice it. You do it subconsciously. You're probably not even aware of it. Constantly watching people's faces, and especially if you're fear-based, you're going to be even better at it because you use that MindSight to keep yourself safe. I know I did. I developed it really young, and to this day, I'm really quick. And so it's important. All right, how do we build a joyful multi-generational community? The simplest and most effective way is with food. Now, how fun is that? It's some people, yay, some people are like, nope. So it's proven that to build joy, to create joy, the number one way is around food. It's both the preparing it and the eating it together and the cleaning up together. It's the together piece. And it's best if it's done with 2 to 3 people. After you get more than 3 people, 3 plus yourself, that's 4, then it isn't quite as effective. But 4, you plus 3, great, perfect number. 2 plus you, 3, perfect. It builds joy. 3 is safer than 2 others because of the codependent aspect that can develop by building joy. But preparing food, eating food, and cleaning up together creates this dynamic in the relational center of your brain that's pretty profound and increases that growth. That's what you're after. More capacity for joy. So practice that. And if you add the 3 generations into that picture, it increases it even more. If you add inviting someone who needs help or hurting or weak into that equation, it's even more increased result in your brain. So consider that. 2, we have times when we invite older and younger people to join our meals. There it is. 3, invite the people who need encouragement or help, the weak, to join you. Serving people of all ages increases your joy capacity. Work together on a meaningful activity. That increases your joy capacity. Going camping. Neuroscience has found that camping increases your joy capacity. Number 7, synchronized dance. That's why we offered that. The motion of doing the synchronized dance with other people increases your joy capacity. Building and flying kites together. Isn't that something? Increases your joy capacity. Yeah, so go fly a kite. You can tell somebody that now. Go fly a kite. Has a whole different meaning now. Strong self-justification, that means defending yourself, being your right, self-protection, etc., is the greatest threat to a joyful, multi-generational community. Transformation happens when the weak and strong are together and weakness is treated tenderly. Without tenderness for the weak, the strong will waste their gentle protective energy on their possessions. And when there is a strong enough joy bond with weak people, the strong will discover they also have weaknesses. Now real transformations can take place for everyone. There's 4 things that must be added to this simple desire to spread joy. Number 1, we cannot live like a possum the way Christians and most of the world did with Hitler. Look at the result. He was a predator. We cannot live like a possum. You can't stick your head in the ground. You can't hide. You can't go away. You got to stay present, and you got to stand up and be a gentle protector. Number 2, we dare not let predators go unopposed. Yeshua pointed out the predators of his day. He called them hypocrites, blind guides, snakes, and a brood of vipers. To keep predators from reproducing through our children, we must restore and model gentle protector skills in ourselves, our family, and our community. Number 4, joy must begin with me. Joy comes from knowing Yahweh, from experiencing his faithfulness, his kindness, his love. And as we grow in his joy, others will grow in joy. That's the thing about joy, it's contagious. You know, when people want it, they see it on you and they want it and they want to hang around you. Not many people, unless you're depressed, want to hang around depressed people. If you're depressed already, then you birds of a feather flock together. But most people want to be around joyful people, people that are calm and gentle and kind and loving. There's 4 common beliefs that make it difficult to believe Yahweh's with us and wants to interact with us. You can change my grammar there, beliefs, misspelled beliefs. Number 1, the fear that nothing will happen. Number 2, that we will be deceived. Number 3, that we will replace the Bible with some experience. Number 4, the belief that we already know what Yahweh is going to say or do. Those are the 4 main objections I get to God encounters. So you can change 3 to 4, and you can change beliefs to belief. And and so, you know, when those surface, you're as a facilitator, you're going to want to help them process those and overcome them. We bind our imaginations to Yahweh so that we are aware that we are one with him, which creates a mutual mind state. When Yahweh is with us in a mutual mind state, there's another misspelled. Boy, I was in not a mutual mind state when I did this. We are often surprised by what we think, see, feel, or perceive. Because Yeshua is so much higher than our own mind, and he surprises us. He brings revelation and he shows us things we didn't know before. There are three things that are obvious in the New Testament that I think are important concerning God encounters. Number one, we are to interact with Yahweh about everything. We're to live our lives eating from the tree of life rather than the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Do you know you can pray a lot but never interact with Yahweh? Two, do nothing from fear. I used to do everything based on fear. Number three, love people deeply. And that takes perfect love dwelling on the inside of us and us having this connection. A mutual mind state is created, developed, and sustained when two minds are securely connected to each other in spite of the emotions. In a mutual mind state, we feel so deeply understood that our mind allows the other mind to tell us who we really are, resulting in a settled sense of security. That's important when you have somebody in crisis and you've already built that relationship with them and you already have a mutual mind state because you've spent time with them attuning. Attunement creates the mutual mind state. So that when they're in crisis and they're freaking out and they're hysterical and they can't, they're in their left brain or their right brain, depending on which way they go when they're triggered and in trauma, then you're able to look them in the eyes and tell them the truth. This is who you are. It's going to be okay. You're a child of God. Yahweh loves you. He said he'd never leave you. We're going to get through this. It's going to be all right. It's going to be okay. And you're able to come in as that gentle protector. And you're also able to keep the predators away because they're really vulnerable now in this position. And some of that, sometimes that includes people that are well-meaning and want to come in with the answers. That's not the time to come in with any answers. And you step in and go, nope, not now. Not now. Or other ways that people, well-meaning, you know, but they just don't understand. So you as a gentle protector can step into that place. And in that mutual mind state, when you do that eye to eye and you attune and you are a gentle protector, that person's brain will actually calm down and come back online relationally so that peace and shalom can come back into the picture. And I think we probably all experienced that at different times with people. We probably also experienced the opposite, where that didn't happen. And how do we grow and reproduce relational skills in others? Gentle protector skills grow and are reproduced by, number one, having a bond between people, a mutual mind state, healthy bond. Two, active, live, face-to-face interactions. Three, a mutual mind state. And number four, telling the story of our interactions when we want people to propagate the skill intentionally. Now that is, we call them Yahweh stories on the farm, where you testify about what Yahweh's done for you, how he did it, what's different, and we brag on Yahweh. It's that simple. And in doing that, that person's relational circuits come online, their joy capacity begins to stretch open out more, and the people hearing and listening that are connected to that person in some way, their joy capacity increases by listening. And then their relationship with Yahweh increases. It's a powerful form of worship. It's actually a form of worship. And on Friday evenings here, we gather every Friday evening at 5:30 just to set up and hang out. And then at 6, we eat together. We have a Shabbat meal together. And it's different weeks. You never know because the Holy Spirit leads us differently. But one thing we regularly do is we allow a time for whoever wants to get up and brag on Yahweh. Just whatever they want, share. It's powerful. And it's our community often says it's their favorite part of our time together. So we'll be doing that tonight. You're welcome to join us. And then it's like I said, it's different. Sometimes we have music, praise and worship. And sometimes I teach. It's just, we just go with the flow. And so tonight we're going to eat, and then we're going to just open it up for whoever wants to share and brag on Yahweh tonight. And that's going to be our worship, because that is a form of worship. So, okay, any questions on what we just talked about? Everybody in here is committed to never being a predator, correct?
Yes.
Amen. I heard that, Gamari. And we all are going to go towards becoming gentle protectors.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, any questions? Okay. All right, this isn't in your notes, but I want to cover. Let's see where this is. It's in my other book. Okay, let's talk about VLE confabulations and verbal logical explainers. Anybody want to hear about that? You don't have the notes, sorry. Do you? Did that get passed out? So we talked about that some, right? How far did we get on that?
We got through all of it.
We did it all?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I did better than I thought. Well, I want to go back to that again, because it's such a big deal. I'm going to jump all over the place. On page what? Page 2 of the notes. So, yeah. Oh, I absolutely do. I agree. That sounds like a marriage. You married the guy and he's going to change surely. But yeah, so great, great question. What do you do leadership-wise? What do you do when you're in a part of a community that doesn't have the same value system as you have? And do you stay? Do you leave? Do you whatever? The answer is real simple. You do whatever Yahweh tells you to do. But if you're part of an organization where their values differ from your values, you have a real problem. And what that creates is division, and division creates die, D-I-E, vision. Somebody's vision has to die. Because if you're going to be under leadership, you're commanded to submit to the leadership that Yahweh's placed over you. So that means either your vision's going to have to die, and if your value is connected to the vision, you have a real problem. And so we call that here square peg, round hole. That's what we call it. when we have a staff person, they come on staff, they're here, they're here long enough, and they finally get to know us enough, and we get to know them, and it becomes obvious that their vision is not the same as our vision. So we meet, we talk it out, we hear them, they hear us, and if there's not a bridge, if there's not some way for that to come together, then square peg, round hole, it's wrong of us to demand you lay your vision down just to come support ours. That's wrong. We're not comfortable with that, so we won't do it. So we just bless you. We love you, but this isn't a healthy home place for you because you're not going to thrive. You're not going to grow. You're not going to be able to spread your wings and fly, and we don't want that. And so that has happened, and it's not that they're wrong and we're right, or we're wrong and they're right. It's not, has anything to do with that. They've just been called to something else. Now, when Yahweh puts you in a family with the same vision, the same heart, the same mind, then that you'll flow and it'll be easy to come under the leadership. And they'll honor you and you'll honor them. And that doesn't mean you agree with everything. The staff here doesn't agree 100% with how Danny and I steward the farm. But they understand submission. And as long as it's not an issue of sin or unrighteousness, they understand and they submit. And we don't ignore when people do things that create division here. That's a bad no bueno. We address it. We talk. And if it continues, it can't happen. We can't allow it to happen because we desire that culture of honor and unity so that there's a commanded blessing that comes with it. So does that answer your question? Yeah.
The permission to work it out.
Right.
Right. I'm talking not just about farm, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it isn't a big deal.
Right.
Sometimes it's a small thing, and we can still be together. But boy, if it's a value, to me, that's another level of, I don't want you to compromise your values to be here.